Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we continue to talk about the Supreme Court rulings today, and we'll expand it to talk about the Supreme Court rulings for this whole session, which is now over, and also this, which we really can't ignore this morning. Abortion rights in Texas, such as they are safe for now. In a way, the world was divided into two kinds of people last night. Those who may have cooked dinner, watched a movie, helped your kids with the homework, and gone to bed at a reasonable hour saying, oh, maybe I won't check Twitter tonight. And then there are people who are really tired this morning because maybe you glanced at Twitter at 8 or 9 o'clock last night, and then you got hooked and you stayed glued to your computer or your phone until 1 or 2 or even 3 in the morning because Wendy Davis was in the midst of a 12-hour filibuster to block SB 5, an omnibus abortion bill set to pass the Texas State Senate. The rules of the legislature dictated that the vote on the bill needed to take place before midnight, talk about Cinderella, Tuesday at 11 a.m. Texas time. Davis began to speak continuously to try to run out the clock and prevent these new abortion restrictions. At first, only Texas policy wonks noticed, but soon Twitter was on fire. And admittedly, we follow a politically minded crowd on Twitter, but from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., all but a few of the thousands of tweets that passed our way were about Davis, not just from journalists, but politicians, celebrities, athletes, and more. The hashtag was Stand With Wendy. Now, while the cable news networks rehashed the day's events or went to reruns, several hundreds of thousands of people tuned into live online streaming coverage of the filibuster using their second screen to either offer support or condemnation of Davis's epic speech. Davis's name was trending every twist and turn of the proceeding as Republicans tried to find ways to stop her, was scrutinized in tweets. And just as an example of how wonky things got, there's a tweet from a reporter on the floor of the Senate at one point describing the latest developments. It went, Frazier raises point of order to act on motion, to table the motion, to appeal the decision, to sustain the point of order. Whoa, and that was under 140 characters. The Senate 1238 a.m., New York time. And then that technical thing was retweeted 200 times and got 60 favorites. But just so we don't lose the forest for the trees, in terms of what was being debated, here is what Texas's SB 5 omnibus abortion bill aimed to do, according to the AP. The proposed bill would ban abortions after the 20th week of pregnancy, require doctors to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals, and limit abortions to surgical centers. Supporters say the bill would improve women's health care. Opponents, of course, warn it would shut down 37 out of the 42 abortion clinics in the state of Texas. And back in the state legislature, a crowd of hundreds, if not thousands, had gathered in the rotunda, most in support of Wendy Davis's filibuster. The drama reached fever pitch in the last half hour before midnight, Texas time, 1 a.m. New York time. At one point, Davis's filibuster was halted as the mostly male Republican leadership tried to find a way to claim she had violated procedure. And then came the voice of one of Davis's female colleagues in what could become the galvanizing moment of the evening.
At what point must a female senator raise her hand or her voice to be recognized over the male colleagues in the room?
And from then on, chaos, either dangerous unruliness or a glorious civic action, depending on your perspective, the crowd in the rotunda decide to help run out the clock. For over 15 minutes, they chanted so loudly that a vote literally couldn't be heard on the Senate floor. Encouraged by the hundreds of thousands tweeting their support and the latest information, they had effectively picked up Davis's filibuster for her. And when the clock struck midnight, there was a loud cheer in the rotunda and a virtual cheer on Twitter. It was an extraordinary moment, though, of course, we're not sure what comes next in the battle to preserve or restrict abortion access in Texas. But we wanted to lay that out for you. Our producer, Jody Avergon, was up till the middle of the night following this on Twitter for us and tweeting along. And he wrote up that account. And back with us right now is Slate's court watcher, Emily Bazelon. Emily, were you one of those people up? You're active on Twitter. Did you get involved and ensconced in that last night as a spectator?
I didn't stay up till the end, but I was following it till about midnight, you know, just wondering what was going to happen. And one of the things I've just been thinking about is why we all get so caught up in these moments of filibusters, right? I mean, Rand Paul had a super popular moment of filibustering, too. Is it that we see the government in action in some way that we can actually relate to? Or is it this idea of defiance by the minority in a way that can just kind of gum up the works? It's unpredictable. It may not win out in the end, but it has this kind of fist-shaking feeling about it.
And, you know, you were on yesterday talking about the Voting Rights Act decision by the Supreme Court. And there's actually a relationship between these two things, because I read that the Texas GOP tried to break up Wendy Davis's district a few years ago by scattering the black and Latino voters in it into several districts. But they got rebuffed by, guess what, the Justice Department under Section 5 preclearance of the Voting Rights Act, exactly what was struck down yesterday. So that is some incredible coincidence that both those things happened on the same day.
It is, but it also is just a really important illustration of what the Supreme Court took away yesterday as a tool for protecting the rights of minority voters. So, you know, what was happening in Texas was redistricting by a Republican-controlled legislature. And one of the ways to get more Republicans into office can be to disperse minority voters. This isn't about minority voters getting to elect someone who is black or Hispanic necessarily. Wendy Davis happens to be white. It's about whether there are enough of them in a district to have the opportunity to elect their candidate of choice. And so because of the rules, which are now gone, but there were these rules that states had to first get any change to an election law, including redistricting, approved by the Department of Justice or a court if they were covered by what's called Section 5. That was mostly the South. And that's been really important for controlling, putting some kind of boundaries up in Texas and other states against gerrymandering. And that was what preserved Wendy Davis's state Senate seat, but it doesn't exist anymore. So next time around, that tool will be gone.
Let's take a caller who I think wants to tie together yesterday's rulings and today's rulings. Adam in the Cayman Islands. You're on WNYC. Welcome back, Adam.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my international call.
Go ahead.
Quickly, I want to say I love your show, and I also want to say I'm as liberal as they come, even though I live in Romney country, and I'm elated about Proposition 8. I'm from L.A., and I marched against it. So anyway, the parallel I was making between yesterday and today is that it's interesting that one's a conservative decision on the face of it, and this one's liberal in the end result. But the interesting connection, I think, is that they both are kind of upholding states' rights, like the DOMA decision specifically, just saying that the state has the state has more power. And in one case, it was a decision against voting rights. And in one state, it was a decision for gay marriage. It's interesting that they come from similar philosophies. And it's also interesting that Scalia would vote with the majority against Proposition 8, but it was because he was holding true to his beliefs about jurisprudence. And I have to say, I'll never say this again in my life, I have a little more respect for Scalia for sticking to his guns, even though it might not be his personal moral beliefs.
Adam, thank you. And that's a very interesting analysis. And Emily, I wonder if you agree with it entirely, that there was a consistent states' rights thread to the two decisions yesterday and today, one weakening the Federal Voting Rights Act with respect to what states can do, and today weakening the Federal Defense of Marriage Act with respect to what states can force the federal government to recognize in the arena of marriage.
Right, and Justice Kennedy being the only common vote to go for both of those ideas. So I do think there is some connection here, but to add a little nuance, what the court was doing today in striking down the Defense of Marriage Act was saying that in this area, state sovereignty particularly matters because states traditionally have more sway than the federal government over domestic relations and over the law of marriage. That's a traditional kind of bedrock part of our federalist system. In the Voting Rights Act case yesterday, it was a much more kind of tenuous invoking of state sovereignty because never before in the law had this idea that the government, the federal government, has to treat every state equally been established before, right? And this was what Chief Justice Roberts said. He talked about the equality of state sovereignty and the notion that the Voting Rights Act was a problem because it was singling out certain states and not others. That's just never been an issue before. And if you think about the way federal law works, of course it affects different states differently all the time. So I think there's a nuance to add to that link that your caller is making.
How do you understand the Scalia vote and the Sotomayor vote? We have callers who want to know, what is Sonia Sotomayor thinking being a dissenter in the Prop 8 ruling? In other words, she voted to uphold Proposition 8 while Scalia voted with the more liberal majority to strike it down.
Well, so here's what they were really doing. Their opinion has the effect that you just laid out, but that's not really the issue they were deciding. They were looking at this very kind of complicated, wonky legal issue, which is, okay, so the state of California passes a ballot initiative, Prop 8, the voters are behind it. Then Governor Jerry Brown and his Attorney General, Kamala Harris, decide not to defend it in court. So then what happens? Is the will of the voter simply thwarted, or do you let another private party step in? And what the California courts had done was to allow the Prop 8 supporters to try the case. They were the ones who showed up and defended the law. And then the Ninth Circuit, the Court of Appeals, let them continue to defend the law on appeal after asking the California Supreme Court if that was a proper reading of California law. That's what the justices split over, this notion of, okay, if you have a ballot initiative, who gets to defend it if the state executive doesn't?
So in a way, it's a populist decision to dissent from this and say people can be able to form groups and go to court on these things, not just state officials.
Exactly. I mean, if when you think about it in defense of the dissenters, it is a really weird idea. The voters pass a law. The governor doesn't like it. That's the end of the law on appeal.
Right.
There's something strange there.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, which we almost have, here's a clip from Jessica Gould from New Jersey Public Radio, who tried to get Governor Christie, where, of course, there are civil unions but no gay marriage. And as your friend William Eskridge told us before, these rulings today put more pressure on New Jersey legally as to whether that's a legitimate distinction anymore. So Jessica Gould from our New Jersey Public Radio branch tried to get Governor Christie's reaction to the Supreme Court rulings. So a lot of reporters asking various versions of the Supreme Court question. No response from Governor Christie as he walked away. He will have to respond at some point. Emily Bazelon from Slate, thanks for coming back on with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll be hearing you on the Slate Political Gab Fest every weekend on WNYC. And that's our coverage, folks, of this historic day for gay marriage at the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Brian Lehrer.